That's fascinating. Wow, I'm excited for everyone else to learn what I just learned.
Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Mom, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
Literally, Billy, this one, this episode, I was just gripping my chair of like, you've got to be kidding. Where? Get them home.
You know, it is, someone pointed this out in an email, 900 miles between Amarillo and Bozeman, Montana. So he's still 900 miles away. That's half a continent.
I believe that, because when I tried to move from Texas to Tennessee, by the time I got to Texarkana, I was kissing the ground. I'm like, why have I not? It takes forever to get out of just Texas alone.
I'm double actually checking, because 900 miles seems like a forever distance. But no, that's right. Actually, the internet tells me 1,200 miles. So
it is a forever distance.
It is forever. So he's still got another 1,200 miles to get home. And then I didn't realize we're kind of hard introing here. I mean, we usually don't do it this way, but Alex is only in Chicago. She pulled into Chicago. I'm like, Chicago?
I know. I was exhausted after watching this episode. But before we get into all of it, let's go over our trivia question from last week. Who won? And then roll into this week's trivia.
Yep, we do trivia every week, and this is for one of the great Y Collection t-shirts at the Taste of Country store. If you go to tasteofcountrystore.com, you can check those out and choose one for yourself. And the first person to correctly email the answer to staff@tasteofcountry.com wins one of those t-shirts. Last week's trivia question was, which 1923 cast member had not one, not two, but three number one hits in his or her home country? And the clue is that one of these songs was the most played song of 1995.
And the answer is...
Jerome Flynn. Banner Creighton. Mm-hmm. Voice Like an Angel. I shared you this, and I showed you the song as well. He was in a duo called... I'm finding it. Robeson and Jerome. And they had three... number one hits in England in the 90s. And these were big deal songs. He did a cover of the Righteous Brothers' Unchained Melody that was the most played song of 1995. That was their only three songs. Their only three releases all went to number one. And they kind of ended on a little bit of a scandal, almost like a Milli Vanilli type scandal, where there was some accusations that maybe they weren't singing their own songs.
Ooh, spicy.
Yeah, this is all via Wikipedia, so, you know, take it for what you want. But, Banner Creighton has a great voice, great actor, great singer, and big congratulations. Julie knew that first, and she'll get to pick out one of those t-shirts today.
Pop off, Julie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, also fun fact, we always bring Papa J up in all this, but Jerome is, that's my papa's name. Jerome is such a, I don't really hear that name as much anymore.
They're not making as many Jeromes as they used to.
They're not making as many Jeromes. No, they're not.
No, they're not.
What's this week's trivia? Hit me.
Winnetka is the Chicago suburb that Hillary and Paul are taking Alex to. Hillary and Paul, new characters we met in episode 5.
I love them.
A lot about them coming up. Okay, hold on. In real life, it's a wealthy village with a population of around 13,000 people, and it's an oddly popular movie town. Name the famous movie home from Winnetka, Illinois.
I'm so excited to learn next week.
I'm excited to share. It's actually a really easy one to research. It doesn't take very much effort at all, but when you kind of get into the movies made in Winnetka, it's like, what is this silly little town in Illinois? Why is it so popular in the movie business parlance? But it is. It's also a very wealthy town.
I Googled. Interesting.
You find it. You see it, don't you?
Whoa.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Wait, that's fascinating. Wow, I'm excited for everyone else to learn what I just learned. Wow. Mm-hmm. Huh. That's kind of cool. Alrighty.
Yeah, staff@tasteofcountry.com is the email address. And as always, you can put your questions, comments, and theories there as well. A little bit later, we'll tackle a whole bunch of those, because you were fantastic this week.
Should we start with, gosh, I'm like, who do we start with? Do we start with Tiona or do we start with Spencer or do we start with Alex?
Let's start with Alex.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Like, 'cause that was, I think, what people want to talk about most, in my opinion, is her storyline, what happened to her, and about Hillary and Paul.
I'm like, I don't even know where to start. Essentially, let's remember from episode 3, she gets robbed. She has no money. So she's had no way to buy food during her journey on the train. She gets to talk to the conductor, and in trade for food, she's going to work as a waitress. She's going to work it off, essentially.
And she seems to be a pretty capable waitress, right? She's doing the job, seems to be doing it well. She comes across Hillary and Paul, who are the British couple early on. They don't have much of an engagement, but then she comes across a single man who is he sexually assaults her. Mm-hmm. Relative to what's coming later, it was a light sexual assaulting, I guess. He just sort of takes her hand and puts it on his crotch as she's trying to wipe up some coffee that spilled. And then the scene ends. And, you know, this guy's a creep. Certainly planted a seed for what's to come the next morning when she has to come back and do the breakfast run.
Yeah.
That was hard to watch. It was a pretty good scene. The actor's name was Chad Orrick, I believe. And cool thing about 1923 is if you find these little small actors on their Instagram pages, often they'll share them in like full makeup. Mm-hmm. And it's really kind of weird and creepy to look at. But again, she's pouring coffee. He moves the coffee cup closer to him. And then he puts his hand under her skirt and mm-hmm. molests her there. She attacks him for
She beats the hell out of him with the coffee pot. I genuinely, I was like, oh my, she killed him. Like she was holy crud, which we learn that she doesn't. She essentially knocks some teeth out. And really, I mean, I'm sure there's a concussion definitely in the midst for him there, but we just never see him again until he's being arrested. But, which we'll talk about in a minute. But man, I was like, I mean, girl, I get it. There's anger there. But I was like, holy smokes, we're about to murder this man.
It felt like she was unleashing a lot of stress.
Yes.
On this guy. I think his character's name is Benjamin, by the way.
Did you feel in that scene, I was only affirmed more. I think Julia Schlafer is one of the best Taylor Sheridan universe actors. She's done a phenomenal job. And this scene only affirmed my thoughts on that.
I 100% agree. And I thought the scene was set up really well with, it was essentially just him in the room, although the British couple also witnessed this, which proved to be valuable. But the moment kind of when they did something with the sound, so it took you inside her head.
Yes.
Where it was like echoey, where you could hear faintly the couple saying, what's he doing to her? And you could faintly hear him saying, almost like he was in like a closeted room next door.
Yes, like a can.
It was really effective.
Yes. No, they did a phenomenal job with the artistry of that. And we come to find out what I love about, so the couple Hillary and Paul, backing it up just a little bit before that she gets molested, they kind of, you can kind of see that they're taking fondly to her, Hillary, the wife, for sure does. And they end up giving her a really gratuitous tip that morning. And it makes me, like, before we see the rest of kind of their interaction, I'm like, oh, someone for the first time that's being nice to Alex.
I like how she says, I want a cookie. Could you give me a cookie?
Which, okay, Billy, I'm doing your job because you're normally so good at seeing actors and actresses like the tar feather gal. And you're like, that must be someone important. And she was a model. Well, Hillary is played by Janet Montgomery, who was in New Amsterdam. Or no, she's New Amsterdam's Janet Montgomery.
Yeah, the actress was in New Amsterdam. Her character was Lauren Bloom.
Yeah.
New Amsterdam. She played the one nurse who had an addiction problem early on. And then honestly, I stopped watching New Amsterdam when COVID started and because it hit a little bit too hard. She was really good in that show. I didn't realize she was British. And this really kind of, this is a really good spotlight for her. She's great in this as well.
Yeah. I don't know if he's played in anything.
I looked him up He's been in a number of roles. He's a veteran actor. He had a role in Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power.
Oh, interesting.
But it was, I don't know what character it was. I saw the character's name, but all those character names kind of sound forever. And honestly, I've been trying to, if you think 1923 is slow moving, try watching Rings of Power. You know, I'm about an episode a month on that because that's about all. It just slogs along. But he has some sort of role in that, according to IMDb.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they end up witnessing the assault, which is important because Alex is arrested and she's going to be taken to jail once they reach Chicago. Come on, Chicago. But Hillary and Paul speak up, convince the conductor and the police officer that Alex is actually the victim. They go talk to Benjamin or Bernard. I forget what his name is. And he ends up being arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And then Alex thinks she's going to hop a train to Fargo, her next destination.
Yeah. Hillary and Paul come up to her and Alex is crying. They come up to her and say, hey, you know, you've had a rough go at it. Come with us. Essentially.
Yep. Because her train got canceled because of the snowdrift.
Mm-hmm.
So she has nowhere to go. She's stuck in Chicago for God knows how long. So they are offering to bring her home with them to Winnetka. And this kind of begs the question I've been asking sort of for the last few days. Do you trust Paul and Hillary?
Yeah, I know. You raised that question and that question didn't even go in my head. I mean, so much negative has been going Alex's way. So for that, I'm like, you know, I'm sure they have poor intentions at this point because, you know, that's the only thing that follows Alex. But at the same time, I would just want to have like hope and humanity, Billy.
I'm of the same mind. I think, I'm with you. Like, I think like it does seem like they're genuinely good people. I have no reason on the surface to not trust them. Other than it's Taylor Sheridan and it's 1923 and everyone's a creep.
I was not anticipating you agreeing with me. That genuinely got me off guard. I was like, oh.
No. The audience is kind of split. I think more people trust them than don't is what I've seen so far. But and you can take this poll question. We've been doing like a twice weekly poll at the Taste of Country YouTube page. And let's see where we're at here with the results to this question. Do you trust Paul and Hillary? I'm wrong. 61% say no way. They're planning something.
But like, what would they be planning?
I don't know. I don't know.
You know?
I don't know. I don't know where. I don't know what Alex does next. I don't know how she gets to Montana because it seems like it's going to be a while. So it's a different train route of some sort. Maybe they'll loan her some money and get her back on, and she'll take a more southern route. Montana.
I'm going to be honest. This was a boring episode. Can I just say it? It just was slow. We didn't even see the Yellowstone, the Dutton Ranch.
That was odd to me. Like the stars of the show sat out of Harrison Ford, Helen Mirren took a day off.
Literally took a day off. They had a doctor's appointment that filming day.
There's a really good, I didn't think it was boring per se, but in the context here of, you know, we just wanted to get home. It's like, okay, more trouble. Here's something that someone pointed out on YouTube that I think is kind of interesting and could kind of explain this stop in Chicago.
Okay.
I'm going to give credit to Boise Blue 2, who says, since there's the avalanche blocking the train tracks to Fargo, she needs a southerly route. Maybe she goes, and this person has it all mapped out, Chicago to Lincoln, Nebraska, to Casper, Wyoming, to Montana. Spencer, who's currently in Texas, could go Amarillo to Casper, Wyoming, to Montana. Maybe they end up on the same train somewhere in Casper, Wyoming, and through happenstance, that's where the great reunion happens.
And they both travel to Bozeman.
Right. We're getting indications now of Spencer arriving. We don't know anything, no sort of hints or clues or previewed scenes about Alex arriving. Maybe she's with them and they both step off that train. I like the theory.
We'll see.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not betting money on it, but
same.
I did do, you're going to laugh. I Googled this morning, 1920s American train routes.
Of course you did. I'm not even remotely surprised. And I'm sitting there trying one to does. As one does.
Trying to plot Spencer's, how he might get home and how Alex now could get there and if they could connect. And no conclusions made. But this goes back to 1883 when I was doing the same for trail routes north to Oregon. If you remember that. I think they call that in the weeds.
I think they call that Billy pull up.
I need.
You're diving too deep.
I need to go introduce myself to my wife and kids.
This episode, we finally get to, we've seen this in the teaser, or sorry, trailer 18 million times. Spencer and Mammy meet.
Mm-hmm.
Finally.
I did like this scene. This satisfied.
Why?
Because it was just cool. I thought it was cool. I like Mammy Fawcett as a character. Her interaction with Spencer was a character, was pretty cool. I kind of liked the 1920s sheriff station and them all kind of gathering around talking. And it moved the plot forward because Spencer got to call Marshal Sheriff McDowell up in Bozeman.
And he's like, are the guys who call it, are the men who killed my brother still on the loose? And the sheriff's like, if you're coming here to cause another war, we don't want it.
Yeah, God bless him. God bless Sheriff McDowell. Doesn't see what's coming there, but
I'm like, yeah, okay, buckle up, brother.
So we got to believe now that Spencer, Jacob, and Kara now know that Spencer's coming home because Sheriff runs off somewhere. He's in theory just days away. Do you think that was Spencer's first ever phone call?
I didn't even think about that. No, because he didn't act phased. Like he knew how to use it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I thought maybe it was.
He knew how to use it, but you can tell he's just been out in Africa for too long because he's like, what the hell is going on in America?
You know what fascinates me?
What?
Is early 20th century, like, phone operators and how you had to dial an operator and they patched you through and there was this extensive system of cables and people could listen in. Like, I love my wife's aunt used to do that in Northern Michigan and she would tell stories about it all. It is just super interesting to me how that all went down and how that worked.
I just recently learned, because obviously I'm 29, so I wasn't alive during all that, but my Nana told me recently, she's like, yeah, you could pick up the phone and hear other people's conversations. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the tea that was served. And it's like, if you wanted to tell something important, what am I going to do? Write a letter? Like, there's only so many ways that they didn't live. If I lived in Texas and my bestie lived in Bozeman, Montana, like, I've got to tell her over the phone, but Susie Q could also be listening to the conversation. Oh.
You're referring to a party line.
Oh, thank That's you. I didn't know.
Yeah, so your house and maybe one, two, three other houses would all share a telephone line. So if you wanted to make a phone call and Mrs. Gonzalez down the street was talking to her sister two towns over, well, you just had to wait until Mrs. G was wrapped up. There wasn't too much you could do.
I've decided that Spencer was the original Rip Wheeler.
In some ways. Yeah, he's got that toughness, that don't give a shit kind of exterior, I think.
That, but then sometimes, like, he's cool, calm, and collected, like Rip is.
True.
Maybe not calm, but just even keel. Like, he's not a Beth who just lashes out irrational at times. But sometimes I feel like Spencer's like, I'm just going to take this into my own hands, where I'm like, okay, buddy, do we really need to? And a lot of his is justified, like the train, the guy, the tax collector, and all that fun stuff. But I do want to talk about, this kind of goes back to Alex, but I noted it because I was like, dadgum, Elsa. When Elsa talks about the imagery of childbirth, and yeah. I was like, good Lord, this is the most gnarly way to paint it. The mother's love, it's ripped from you. You, like, you're torn in two, like, talking about childbirth. And then talking about a mother's love, that I'm like, something about this isn't warm and fuzzy. And I'm like, you're not making me look forward to childbirth.
I feel like Elsa had a bad day in heaven.
Yeah. That's funny.
And my wife was sitting next to me, like, even she was like, God, woman, it's not that bad.
Like, I did. I was
three
like,
kids naturally. God. Like,
wow. Also, wait, complete side note, pop off to your wife for having three kids naturally.
Yeah, yeah. So,
sorry.
Hopefully she doesn't mind. but no, Elsa, this was not the most impressive Elsa VO episode, in my opinion.
No.
She's kind of just filling some gaps. Like, she comes in with her just, like, we need another storm cloud.
Yeah, she had a bad, to your point, she had a bad day in heaven.
I have another little trivia piece. It's not a trivia officially, but a little note here. Jennifer Carpenter plays Mammy Fawcett. Mm-hmm. And she's been doing some interviews talking about her character. I read one on Collider that was really good, talking about how she got the role, the story, and the real life history of Mammy Fawcett. But she also shares that a woman named Genesis Rodriguez also auditioned for that role. And that woman would go on to be the new star of Landman season 2, which just aired this past winter, I believe, and who's also a really good actress. It's just interesting that they were both going for the same role and ended up kind of being such large parts of the Taylor Sheridan universe.
Yeah. Huh. Cool.
Yeah.
Let's talk Tiona.
Okay. You think Pete's dead?
No.
No.
No, I don't. I think one of the guys who's with Father Renault.
I've been saying Renault. So let's go.
Renault is dead.
Well, there's only two of them. It's just him and the Marshal.
Okay, sorry. The Marshal's dead.
You think the Marshal dies?
I don't know. I just think it's too stereotypical for Pete to die. Like, that's the assumption, easy assumption. So I'm like, should we bet against it?
So there was three gunshots. Both the priest and the Marshal were shooting from higher ground on top of their horses. Versus Pete was in front of his horse with a gun. And some people did listen to see which of the gunshots sounded the same to see if Pete might have got off two volleys. But I don't like the math there. Three gunshots and only one Pete.
Was Taylor Sheridan just done with his character?
Well, I think probably Pete and runs his horses probably both die. In my opinion, I've kind of long thought that just Tiona ends up surviving.
Oh, and she has to do the journey alone. That's a lot.
Maybe she links up with someone along the way, but like there is an episode. This is actually kind of interesting. There's an episode preview, like on IMDb. They somehow have advanced episode descriptions, and I think that's like episode 7 refers to Tiona meeting up with an old friend.
Hmm. I'm like, who's her? She doesn't have many friends.
No. She does not.
Interesting.
They're all dead.
Well, Jesus, they're running north at this moment. And yeah, that's when Pete finds a watering hole and happens to find that the Marshal and Father Renault are also at said watering hole.
It felt like that was kind of inevitable. And it all is kind of spurred into action because the cowboy who hires their group ends up blabbing to Father Renault once mm-hmm. he finds out that Tiona killed two nuns. Of course, they leave out the context about why she actually killed those nuns. They just say she's evil and they want to compare her to a wolf and a savage, which is really heartbreaking. But he gives them up and they run them down, heading north. They were going to go north, then west into New Mexico, and then south into Mexico as a way of kind of avoiding the signs and the search. And mm-hmm. It looks like time is running out and that's not... I mean, we got to have a good thing. We got probably a big episode with them next week, wouldn't you think? Unless it's just an episode off from the Tiona storyline, which seems to be a popular thing to do.
Yeah, I think we're an episode off.
I had one other thing I wanted to ask about before we do Q&A. Oh.
Well, the train station. We see we first see your favorite friend, Clyde.
Yep.
Clyde and Banner dispose of Christie's body. At the train station, which is, I mean, it's not really like this is not a monumental statement, but we just see the beginning of the train station.
What do you think was actually in the sack in real life that they rolled down the train station?
Maybe awake? Like a what?
Am I keeping you awake?
Sorry. I'm so sorry. Y'all, I just yawned. I'm so sorry. that's so bad. No, I'm locked in, Billy. I feel like a dummy, like a heavy dummy. So it felt like it. You know what drives me nuts? Whenever scenes like they'll put a coffee cup, and you can totally tell the way that the actor is holding the coffee cup. There's nothing in that coffee cup. They're just walking like this, and I'm going, there's no coffee in that to go coffee cup that you were sloshing around there. Yeah. And so I feel like it looked like it was heavy, or at least they did a really good job acting. So my thought is like some type of dummy, or at least weights that make it look like it's heavy.
So we have Banner, who's showing regret and remorse for what he's doing. Clyde and the other guy don't seem to be as remorseful.
Yeah.
At this point. And they throw the body over, and this is a great time to mention that next week, as part of this podcast, an interview with Brian Conowall, a.k.a. Clyde. And I'm going to tease it for you, little Addison.
I love that for me.
Your mind's going to be blown. This is a mind-blowing get.
Okay. This interview.
I know. I hear your skepticism.
I'm intrigued. I'm confused, but I'm intrigued.
Tell your friends, Clyde's coming to the Dutton Rules podcast. That's just all I'm saying. You won't regret it.
All right. Well, I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have
the thing I wanted to mention was Don Whitfield. There is a growing theory, and this is actually the most popular conspiracy theory of the week, that now the couple, the Chicago couple, somehow know or are familiar with Donald Whitfield in Bozeman. They're both being British, that somehow that they know each other, maybe they're related, or somehow that's where the evil seed is planted.
Gotcha.
So watch for that, I guess. I don't know if I buy it per se, but...
It feels a little stretchy, but...
A little bit.
But maybe not.
A little bit.
We'll find out.
Q&A?
Oh, you read my mind. Let's jumping right in. Okay, at Dwayner4767 says, I think Hillary and Paul can be trusted, and I have an extremely crazy prediction. Paul is either involved in or knows someone involved in early aviation, and they're going to get Alex a plane ride to Montana. Oh my gosh, that would speed things up. I love this idea.
You know, there was an episode a couple episodes back where Donald Whitfield specifically mentions how long it would take by plane to get from Chicago to Montana or the coast. So maybe that was a seed for that kind of thing. Okay, I'll go with it. I'm not sure I'm getting in a plane in 1923, but Alex seems like the adventurous type that she might do it.
I think if she's running and yeeting herself onto a moving train, she's kind of desperate. The things that she's done, I think she would do it. She sat on top of a sinking ship, like,
Yeah, all right. I have questions about plane travel in the 1920s, but I'm going to pass over those as we get to the next one here.
At Walton Sellers, 6941 says, did anyone else catch Spencer's nugget pertaining to his rifle? He's been carrying a 416 Rigby all the way from Africa in 1923, as well as today. A 416 is one of the most powerful rifles on Earth.
I didn't catch that. 416 rifle is still a very powerful rifle. I looked it up, and it's considered just a really big bullet. It's the kind of bullet, a gun you would use to be a big game hunter. Interesting sort of, a lot of people do watch the show to check out the firearms and stuff and some of those antiques. And it's kind of cool to make those connections, I think.
The next one I have for us is at MandyMac74 on our YouTube channel. Says sexual harassment wasn't really a thing, air quotes around that, in 1923. It happened, but it wasn't even thought of being wrong.
So I don't think things were so wild in the 1920s that if people were being sexually assaulted in broad daylight on a train, people would just kind of go about their business. Like, it was still a crime. Sure. it was probably maybe a little bit more skeptical to a woman's story if she was claiming it, but it wasn't like I don't know what a comparable society would be like. And this is also Chicago, so you figure some metropolitan sensibilities. I think that's probably not as true as she says. Like, it was, if you were sexually assaulted on the street and there was a man who was willing to stand up as a witness, because but probably didn't take a woman's word for it, then I think you very well would be prosecuted for that crime. So I'm going to push back a little on that, Mandy. Now, that said, I have kind of brazenly given some opinions in some areas I didn't know before and got my hand slapped. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about Alex at the immigration center and her gynecological exam, and I got an email that had the subject line, Billy, Billy, Billy. I was like, okay, fair. I'm going to stay in my lane, but I am going to go out on a limb in this one and say it was probably still a prosecutable crime in 1923 to do what this guy did.
The next one I have from for us is at Bless Your Heart 254. The whole show is suffer porn. Do these people ever just have a minute to breathe, talk, or do their daily tasks?
Fair. And I love the term suffer porn. It is. like everybody's fair. Just, everybody's miserable. Very few good days. In most cases, it wouldn't be that exciting to see Aunt Kara just baking a cake. But I could go for a good Aunt Kara baking the cake scene just to kind of settle things in a little bit.
Just some happiness. Then playing a board game.
An email too from James who said, is there talk about the spinoff series 1944? Because that's how long it'll take them to get to Montana. People are starting to have jokes about this all. I appreciate the sense of humor.
To get us through this grueling season.
Yeah, yeah.
The last one I have for us is at Joe Norris 9784, who says, Billy, thanks for all the great videos. Oh, good stuff. Oh, this is funny. And lose the man bun. It doesn't work for you. Wow, Joe Norris coming for your hair. And it's loud and proud today.
Joe, my brother.
I don't know. They say the higher the hair, the closer to God. And Billy's hair is rising.
Very close to Jesus today. I caught a stray there, I feel like.
I'm going to come in your defense. Billy's worked really hard. I've always told you, you've got a good head of hair. Billy used to be known for, y'all don't know this, Billy used to be known for his, I don't know, paperboy hat? Is that what they were called?
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to that style.
He always had a hat on. And then he said, let the flow grow. Let it grow.
You want to hear a funny story?
Oh, absolutely.
My boy Clyde, he wears that kind of hat, right?
Uh-huh.
After my interview with Brian Conowall, he shoots me this email of holding a photo of me in that paperboy hat. In the photo, he's wearing his own paperboy hat. And it's like an 8.5 by 11 photo of me that he somehow found. It was my Twitter profile for a while. Printed out and held up and took a picture of himself and sent it to me. It was the best thing I've ever gotten from someone I've talked to. I'm going to print that picture out and put it on my wall.
Billy, that's tremendous. The best. But also, I'm like, does he have that hung somewhere? Now I do have a few questions, but wow, I love that.
Don't ruin it for me, Addison. Sorry.
You're right. You're so right. Staff@tasteofcountry.com is where you can add your comments, thoughts on the episodes, also trivia question will go there. Also, always recommend rating, reviewing, sending our podcast to all your friends, family, your neighbor, someone on that party line.
Yeah, we've had great audiences lately these last few weeks. It's been growing really consistently with the podcast and then especially the YouTube videos. I think the preview videos we do on Thursdays last week's had about 350,000 people. That watched it, which is like, ooh, that blew my mind. So certainly appreciate that. And I just love the engagement. I actually kind of tend to measure the comments more. And we're getting a few hundred comments per video, which I do my best to go back and forth with. And we try to engage with as many people as we can.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you're seen and appreciated. Thank you.
All righty, Billy. I've got nothing else. I'm going to close this out if you're ready.
Let's do it.
Alrighty, well, the Dutton Rules Yellowstone 1923 podcast is another investigated and invigorating Townsquare Media podcast.